Welcome, Mr. Walzberger and Ms. Casserly. Marshall, why don't you go ahead and call this case?
Calling case number A210484 in the matter of complaint decision file 21010C and 21031C on behalf of CLC from ISD 083301.
All right. And this is this oral argument is being conducted remotely through Zoom. And if there are any technical difficulties at all during the argument, you can't hear, the captioning is not working properly, or there are any other problems or any additional accommodations, just let us know. And we'll make sure everything's working and everyone can participate fully in the oral argument. With that, Mr. Walzberger, you can proceed. You'll have 15 minutes. The Department of Education will then have 15 minutes, and you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. So please proceed. Please provide your name, state your name at the start, because there will be an audio recording of this argument posted after we conclude. All right, go ahead.
Thank you very much. Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Michael Walzberger, and I represent Independent School District number 833, which is the South Washington County School District. At center, the question in this case is whether a public school district is required to provide special education and related services to non-public school students, meaning students who have been unilaterally placed in a private or non-public school by their parents, and whether the districts are required to provide those services on site at the non-public school. If the answer is yes, school districts are responsible for implementing the IEPs of students on site at non-public schools, and thus are responsible for providing the education of non-public school students on site at the non-public school. The MDE would have this court believe that the law requires and has always required public districts in Minnesota to provide FAPE, or a free appropriate public education, to non-public school students while they're on site at the non-public school. We know that's not true. And we know that's not true because otherwise we wouldn't have cases like the 2017 case of Special School District Number 1, excuse me, versus RMM, which addressed for the first time whether Minnesota law gives a shared time student, meaning a student who splits time between the public and private school, the right to FAPE on a shared time basis and the right to a due process hearing to challenge the provision of services. Make no mistake about it, the case before you is a watershed case, and I'm not sure if you realize quite how big it is for Minnesota school districts. It has astronomical implications in terms of staffing, in terms of finances, and in terms of the responsibility for students while they are on site at the non-public school. This is made clear.
Mr. Walzberger, can I ask you a quick question?
Absolutely.
So is this a procedural case where the right process wasn't followed? Or do we have to reach the major issue that you're talking about?
I think you absolutely have to reach the major issue. That's what the MDE's decision turns upon in terms of the corrective action that it ordered the district to provide, that it has said in its decision the district must comply with going forward. So I think absolutely you have to reach that. And the entire brief of the MDE, they don't back down from this. They double down and say, yes, when students need services one-to-ones or services on site at the non-public school, the district has to provide them. And let's think about what that really means.
Also, turning yep. back to Judge Siegel's question, which I think is a very good one. What part of the MDE's decision were you referring to in your answer?
Yeah, in particular, the the memorandum, the training memorandum that it required the district to send out to its staff. And that memorandum,
that's part of the corrective action, not part of the actual decision itself, right? I mean, I understand that's on appeal here too, but in terms of the decision, what language in the decision are you arguing creates this, forces this substantive issue?
Yeah, first of all, I do believe that they are part and parcel of each other. They're, you know, it's, you can't really separate the corrective action from the decision because it flows directly from the decision. And in the decision, the MDE does find, for example, it addresses some of the issues that the district raised in terms of concern. In findings, it talks about providing FAPE to all parentally placed non-public school students within the district's boundaries without regard to residency. That's conclusion number 8. It raises the same exact arguments in its actual decision that are, addressed in the corrective action memo and then also in the MDE's brief. In terms of the also the decision referencing the Title II, which it has no authority to utilize as a basis for the decision going forward, that's another concern, and that's in conclusion number 14. And then specifically conclusion number 16, it says the district failed to appropriately develop and include in the student's February 2020 IEP provisions regarding the student's use of an FM system at the private school. And so it's not just saying, yeah, there were some procedural mistakes and we haven't appealed the procedural mistakes themselves. Because I think when you get familiar with special education, you see there's not a perfect case. I mean, the staff are gonna occasionally have errors here and there.
So you but agree the bottom that line, the prior written notice wasn't provided as required with regard to agree. The change in IEP.
Yeah, and we have not appealed on that basis. We agree that that what did not adequately describe the change in the IEP. And I would note that, again, we've never disputed that. And the corrective action doesn't address that. The MDE recognizes that's something that can happen and we can easily address that going forward. What we're concerned is about is the substance of the obligation going forward for this district and every other district in the state, frankly.
So can I ask another quick question then?
Yes.
Or I hope it's quick. So the provision about having to determine needs on a case-by-case basis, while that's procedural, that is part of your appeal, or is it not?
Well, that is
the
part
failure
of the
to determine. Yeah. And so can you address that? How was this done on a case-by-case basis when it was a blanket decision?
Yeah. And first of all, I don't know that the record demonstrates that MDE uses the language policy repeatedly, and there's no indication that the district actually adopted a policy and made a determination it wasn't legally obligated to provide assistive technology on site at the non-public school. And the piece about making a decision on a student by student basis, that comes from Minnesota Statute 126C.19, which is the statute that gives school districts discretion to determine the location of the services. And it says that we can, you know, pick the non-public school, a public school, or a neutral location, but we have to determine that on a student by student basis, consistent with federal law. Well, first of all, we know federal law doesn't change anything. It simply allows for discretion. We know that because the Court of Appeals, this court, and the Eighth Circuit have both said that federal law does not give non-public school students any individual right to services. So clearly they don't have an individual right to services on site at the non-public school. And then in terms of a student by student basis, the MDE incorrectly asserts that the district did not determine on a student by student basis the location where services will be provided. Specifically, the record shows the district determined services would be provided at the middle school. And it was twice a week at that middle school.
Wasn't that decision, doesn't the record reflect that that decision was made on a district-wide basis and not considering the students' individual needs?
No, there was no decision about, nothing in the record about that other than the fact that the district had made the decision and had been that way many years. The only part that changed it was not providing the assistive technology at the public school. That's the only thing, or excuse me, at the non-public school. That's the only thing that changed. And
but
I think
that
part of
the for this particular student. I mean, that
was.
Decision wasn't made in the IEP process, correct? When was that decision made?
Yes.
Where
yes
in the record
no.
do we find that?
Yep. So I think that you would, first of all, the decision was made based on a legal obligation with respect to this student. And then it was not adequately discussed or addressed in the IEP, or excuse me, the prior written notice. But I wouldn't want to say it wasn't addressed through the IEP process, because it was documented in the IEP, which went out to the family, which they reviewed, and which they allowed to go into effect. So it's not entirely correct to say it wasn't addressed through the IEP team process.
Is there anywhere in the record that reflects a discussion about making that decision with regard to this particular student's needs?
Only the back and forth between the special education director and this particular student's parent, and also this particular student, and then also the principal of the school that the child attended.
But you would agree that the district can't make the decision, a blanket decision for all students, that the decision about location has to be made according to the statute on an individual student by student basis.
I absolutely do agree with that. And that's part of what the district emphasized in the corrective action training memorandum. It proposed, it put that language out there. It was the first one that put that language out there. So going back in terms of the broader concern here, I want to make sure that there's understanding of that, because it's not just assistive technology that's at issue here. There are many, many students who require a one-to-one teacher, one-to-one paraprofessional, one-to-one nursing throughout the school day, not just the little blip here and there, speech and language services, adaptive physical education services, toileting services, mobility services, interpreter services. And the NDE's decision would mean that anytime a student with those needs enrolls, the parent enrolls a student in a non-public school, the public school will have to provide those services on site at the non-public school. That's what the crux of the
NDE. Wasn't the department's decision, though, that it had that the decision has to be made on a case-by-case basis and for this particular student, because the student needs that FM technology to have FAPE? I mean, not just during the 15 minutes of instruction, but the student can't learn without that FM technology. So wasn't it an individual decision for this individual student?
I think that's part of the argument of the MDE. The district's response would be that there's nothing in the record that shows this child was not making meaningful progress on IEP goals and objectives, which is the central component of a free appropriate public education. And with the time that the student was receiving services at the public school. Now, with that, there's no doubt the student would benefit from that FM system. No question about that. But whether the student has an individual educational need for that is another question. And I would go back again and say, if that's the standard that we're applying and student, we're going to have to provide that on site, then every other circumstance, like the examples I gave, are going to be situations we have to provide that too. And that MDE says that flat out in their brief. If a child needs, so any child who needs this, who's enrolled by a parent, is going to get the whole range of services on site at the non-public school. Because there's no way we can provide in 2 hours or whatever the shared time amount is, those services at our school. So the MDE says we have to provide the whole day of services across the whole day for the kid. That's what we'd have to do. And that's just simply we don't have the funding for it. We don't have the staff for it. And then the practical issues it raises. And that is not consistent with the Eighth Circuit's decision in RMM, which really stands for the proposition that we have an obligation to provide services to the child when the child's with us, but not during that part of the day when the child's in the non-public school. Because as
that
the court
case
said,
didn't address assistive technology, correct?
Nope. They did not, but the MDE is taking the position that assistive technology is a service. It's part of FAPE. And so then that puts it on all fours with the RMM decision, which dealt with services to the student.
Can I ask you a question?
Please.
Where do I find the definition? Because 125A.18 and 126.19 refer to special instruction and services. That's the obligation of the school district. So how do I define that? What's included in special instruction and services?
Yeah, I think based on the jurisprudence and this court's previous decisions, that equates to a free appropriate public education. And, you know, at center that with the federal case law would say is what is necessary for a student to make meaningful progress on IEP goals and objectives. That's really what the main focus is of FAPE. So it equates to a free appropriate public education.
Yeah, but that free of, I know FAPE and all that, but that's not particularly helpful. So services would include, I mean, the FM system would not be instruction. So then correct. It would be included in the, it's included as a service then. Is that within the meaning of Minnesota statute and federal regs?
That's the position that the MDE has taken over the years, yes.
And what's the school district's position on that?
Yeah, I think it's reasonably debatable, but based on previous decisions from this court, I don't think, I think this court has already decided that decision and I could, or that particular issue in, let me grab the case for you here. I do believe in the Robbinsdale case, this court went through the analysis and talked about that. And I also believe that RMM would stand for the proposition that, things that a student receives, including assistive technology, are part of a free appropriate public education.
Do we give different, from a point of standard of review, do we give any deference on anything to the agency in this case?
To its factual findings, to the extent that anything is in dispute, but to the interpretation of statutes, no, yeah, definitely not. And the MDE acknowledges that as well. I think I'll, since I only have 12 seconds left, I'll save my remaining comments for rebuttal because I don't think I can get going and finish something in 8 seconds. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Waltzberger. Ms. Casserly, when you're ready, and then just introduce yourself.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. I'm Martha J. Casserly. I'm an Assistant Attorney General, and I represent the respondent, the Minnesota Department of Education. May it please the court and counsel. Minnesota state law is clear and unambiguous. School districts must provide special instruction and services to all children with disabilities in the district. That is this course 2008 Independent School District number 281. And is citing both Minnesota statute section 125.18 as well as 125A.03A. When the realtor public school insists that it will only provide the technology, assistant technology device to the student with a hearing disability, quote, only when the student participates in public school programs and activities. That is a denial of special education services to the student solely because his parents have enrolled him in a non-public school. Here, the public school district's novel argument that it is only required to serve the student when the student participates in public school programs and activities is contrary to Minnesota law. It is based on a partial sentence.
Can we talk about the RMM case for a little bit? I believe appellant argued that assistive technology is part of the special education services that the student receives. Would you agree with that?
Yes, as cited in the beginning part of the brief, when a student has a communication disability, the IDEA requires that the IEP team determines whether or not he needs assistive technology, devices, and services. And every local school district, which is the public school here, must ensure assistive technology devices are made available to the child with a disability if required as part of the child's special education. So yes, assistive technology devices fits within the umbrella of special education services and instruction.
So I believe appellant is arguing based on RMM that the district is only required to provide services, special education services for the part of the school day while the student is at the public school, but not while the student attends private school. And I'm guessing appellant's relying on a sentence in that paragraph that says instead, it's towards the end of a a paragraph. It's the last sentence in a paragraph, and it says, instead, the district must provide the appropriate services for part of the regular school day while the student attends private school for the rest of the day. Can you address whether RMM stands for the proposition that the school district isn't required to provide the assisted technology during the part of the day when the student is at the private school or the non-public school?
Yes. First, I want to point out that the Eighth Circuit in that 2017 decision, first of all, the student in that case, it did not involve the assistive technology device. The location of the services, whether it should be at the non-public school or the public school, was not a dispute in the RMM case. In the RMM case, the sole special education services was a 2 1-hour, a 1 hour twice a week instruction in reading and writing that was held at a nearby public school. The location of that services was not in dispute there. That partial quote of that sentence to which Your Honor just quoted was the Eighth Circuit addressing the Minneapolis Public Schools' concern about monitoring. The public school was concerned that if it would be responsible for providing FAPE for students who were in the non-public school, that it would have to monitor all of the non-public school education services. That was the second argument that the court was addressing. And the court said the statute does not require public school districts to constantly monitor the education provided in public schools. Instead, as Your Honor just quoted, and that word instead is always left out in the school district's quotations here, the district must provide appropriate services for part of the regular school day while the student attends the private school for the rest of the day. So the court there is explaining what the school district's role is for that nature of services. This case, by contrast, the dispute is over a different nature of services. It involved a FM system, a microphone and a receiver, and it involved a different type of service. And so to take a discussion about the role in monitoring the education services does not give the school district authority to say, oh, we don't have to provide any services on site at the non-public school. It needs to be an individualized determination as to what does this child need. And the public school's evaluation with this child needs an assistive hearing device to supplement his hearing aids all parts of its school day. That's what the public school's evaluation was. In the IEP for 7 years stated.
I'm sorry, can I interrupt just for a minute?
Sure.
So 126C.19, that subdivision 4B, how, if we affirm the MDE's interpretation that the FM, the school district was required to provide this service at this non-public school, aren't we reading out of state law the discretion given the school district to determine the location at which to provide the services? How do you read those two things together? I mean, as Mr. Walzberger said, I mean, it's not the instruction now we're talking about, it's services. And that sentence specifically says services. It doesn't say instruction, it says services. And so what's the Minnesota Department of Education's position on that? Because obviously, I mean, as Mr. Walzberger said, this isn't just the FM system, but they may have to provide, in essence, full-time employees to assist students if they need those services while they're attending a non-public school. And okay, I've talked long enough, sorry.
I'm glad Your Honor brought that up. The school districts have the discretion to determine the location in which to provide the services on a student-by-student basis consistent with federal law. And in this case, for example, for this particular student, he's actually receiving two types of services. He's receiving instruction in deaf and hard of hearing services, I think for 50 minutes twice a day. And that is being provided over at the public school because he can receive those services over at the public school. That's not in dispute here. And the Department of Education is challenging that if they can provide the services at the public school site, they can, the public schools do have the discretion as to how they're going to administer and provide these type of services. But what's this discretion is not absolute. And as pointed by Your Honors earlier today, it has to be decided on a student by student basis, and it has to be consistent with federal law.
So here, how do they exercise that discretion then? I mean, let's say, so then that's a procedural issue. They didn't decide it on a case by case basis here. But could they decide, we've got, you know, this system and you can use it at our facility, at our, at one of, you know, at whatever school, but within the public school system, is that lawful? Would that be a lawful decision?
If they had decided on a individual basis, they would have to the school district still has its mandatory obligation to provide special education instruction to students, even though their parents have enrolled them in a non-public school.
They but still where, have where to does provide that come the services. From? I'm sorry, how do you read that? And I think that's the essence of, but I'll let Mr. Walzberger speak for himself. But how do you read that provision and, you know, the discretion about location with saying, we don't care where the location is, if it's, in this case, an FM device system, or it's a full-time assistant, you have to provide that at a non-public school.
Well, again, it has to be done on a case-by-case basis. Department of Education decision, and I want to point that out here, the Department of Education decision was based on the circumstances and facts before this case. It had to deal with an FM system. And it determined here that this child was not receiving the assistive technology device to which the evaluation and IEP team determined that was necessary, and the school district agreed. School district agrees this child needs the special education, that needs this assistive technology device in order in a noisy classroom here. What can be done on a case by case basis to try to answer your question is if in this case the school district or the IEP determines that the child does not need the assistive technology device, the child has upgraded in the hearing aid, the child is able to do technology, is always improving, that the child would receive this additional hearing assistive device, maybe not by an FM system, but something else. That would be an example of a case by case basis as to how can the public school, how can this student receive this necessary services for all parts of his school day, which is what the district evaluation is. And I would refer the court to, there have been several cases, including two from the Eighth Circuit, and there have been other cases in this narrow situation where, again, where the public school said, if you would just enroll over here in the public school, we'll provide you the one-on-one aid or the sign language interpreter or here, the assistive technology device. And this court held in ISD 1281 where the districts that if you would just enroll in a public school, you'll get the services. And that would be denying the special education services to which the Minnesota legislature decided that students were entitled to receive.
I'm sorry to keep interrupting you, but I'm trying to figure out the scope of the discretion to determine the location and what the department's position is on that. Because you're saying, well, if it's a requirement of the IEP, then they have to provide it regardless of location, correct? But that's not what Minnesota law, I mean, that's not what that sentence says. And so let's assume that they did it on a case-by-case basis and they sat down with the parents, they followed all the process, and they said, for whatever reason, we know you need this, but we are short on money, we are short on staff, you know, we can provide this in our building, we can't provide it elsewhere. So come to our building and you've got, you know, we'll provide you with every service you need. Would that satisfy Minnesota statute?
Then,
I mean, it's in the IP and they did it on a case by case basis. I'm just trying, and I know I'm sounding difficult here, but I'm just trying to understand what scope of discretion, or is it the department's position that if the kid needs something to learn, a service, whether it's a full-time aide or a part-time aide to come, you know, provide sign language at a non-public school, whatever that kid needs, that the school district is obligated to provide that at the non-public school.
Yeah. And again, I would refer the court to the policy decision made by the Minnesota legislature back in 1976, that no child shall be denied special instruction and services because his parents had them enrolled him in a non-public school. And again, this decision is based, you know, public school district and agrees that the child is needing this assistive technology device and in for all parts of his school day, but it is utilizing its administrative discretionary tool to nullify its mandatory obligation. It's required to provide the assistive technology advice.
And I know we're over time, but
if follow-up.
Yeah, please go ahead. I was going to ask if there are any more questions. Go ahead.
Just following up to Judge Siegel's questions. On page 25 of the addendum, which is the MDE's decision document, paragraph 1 says the district violated, and then it lists several CFR provisions when it failed to consider and include the student's use of the FM system at the student's private school when developing the IEPs. And then basically it seems to me, is that the provision by which the MDE is ordering the inclusion of this assistive technology in the IEP?
Yes, it was because the district told its staff not to talk about this in the IEP meeting, and it did not put the change in the prior written notice, which is like the cover sheet. So it violated the clear procedural rights that the parent and the student have by not notifying them of this unilateral removal. And so that on that basis, the department here in this narrow case ordered that the assistive technology device needs to be provided to the student as required by the evaluation and by the IEP team, because it did not follow the procedure rights here.
So for this particular student, the decision was based on failure to comply with the IEP process and the fact that it was previously included in the student's IEP.
Yes, for 7 years it was provided. The district provided these services on site at the non-public school site. I also want to point out that the school district would get reimbursed for the providing the assistive technology device to the student, whether the student is using it on site at the non-public school or whether the student is receiving it at the public school site. It will be reimbursed because Minnesota state law provides for non-federal special education services that are necessary for the student, which is undisputed here, that it would be reimbursed at the same rate, whether it's provided on site or at the private school or at the public school.
All right, and Mr. Walzberger will allow you extra time, but I do have one more question because the school district did raise the question of what's in the corrective action memo. And there is a sentence in there that I don't know where the legal authority for it comes from. And that the sentence is, and this is one that the district added, is that the public school district where the non-public school is located is obligated to provide a FAPE to non-public school students. Isn't it that where the residency of the student is rather than where the school is located?
Here again, resident was not a dispute here. Here in this specific case, the student was and his parents were a resident of the South Washington School District.
So the school district would have, I mean, the department would have no problem then amending that and saying, changing it to the language, the resident of the student. I understand that both the non-public school and the student were located within the school district. So that's really not an issue and that can be worked out between the parties. Is that right?
Well, the department did not want to get into the residency issue in the corrected training order. Here, the school district misstated what the law required, and the department ordered the school district to send out a training memo that had the correct application.
But doesn't the training memo, isn't that an incorrect statement of the law, though, that sentence? That's not the law, is it? Or if it is, cite me to it.
I don't know if you're referring to the sentence that the school district wanted to put in the corrective action order.
No. I'm referring to the sentence that's in the final that the MD introduced about the public school district. It's on addendum page 29. Well, that's the redlined sentence. It's in the middle of the paragraph on obligation to provide FAPE. And it says the public school district where the non-public school is located is obligated to provide a FAPE to non-public school students. And in fact, it should say where the, either make it specific to this case, where the non-public school and the student happen to be a resident of the same district. But that can be fixed, right? I mean, that seems like it's wrong.
Yeah, and I don't have the respondents. I can pull over there. My recollection is that the Minnesota Department of Education did not want to adopt the school district's language about residence because residency was not an issue in this case.
This is a training document intended for district staff, correct?
Yes, it is.
So it should correctly reflect the law.
Yes.
In a clear manner.
Yes. And so I will take a look at that sentence. My recollection is that the department did not want to get into the residency issue because that was not an issue or dispute in this case. The school, the residency, if a student is not a resident of the district but attending a school, the obligations when you're dealing with non-residents attending a non-public school in the district, then you get into reimbursements back and forth between the two. But I will take a look at that sentence and make, of course, the department would be want to be correct as to what the corrective action order states.
Right. Okay, thank you very much, Ms. Casserly.
Can I follow up? I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. You're not, Ms. Casserly, you're not done yet.
Thank you, Chief, and thank you, Council, for one other question about that same paragraph. It seems to me that first sentence in the paragraph could be confusing to someone who's not familiar with the law. And I know that appellant pointed this out. The beginning part of the sentence says the district is required to provide special education instruction and services to students who are parentally placed in a non-public school located within the district's boundaries, but it's not limited to shared time students. And Ms. Casserly, would you agree that the obligation only extends to shared time students?
With respect to that sentence, the first clause of that sentence is a direct quotation from 125A.03A. The second part of that first sentence refers to, so shared time basis is cited in that sentence, and that's correctly quoted from 125A.18. So yes, the school district here is required to provide special education services to students who are parentally enrolled in a non-public school on a shared time basis. And shared time pupil is defined in Minnesota statute to be one that is both one that is in a public school and that attends a non-public school the rest of the day. So shared time means both. It means both enrollment in a public school, or it means not enrollment. It means attending the public school program during part of the day, and shared time pupil also includes one who attends a non-public school. So that
and
first sentence.
I saw that. I'm sorry. I saw that argument in your brief, but I am struggling to find the language in 125A.03 that you're referring to when you say it says the district is required to provide special education instruction and services to students who are parentally placed in a non-public school without reference to shared time. So where is that specifically in 125A.03?
Certainly, it's 125A.03A. Every district must provide special instruction and services either within the district or in another district for all children with a disability. And it goes on to talk about children suspended. It goes on to talk about resident. Then the second half of that sentence refers to 125A.18, which deals with non-public school, which states no resident shall be denied services on a shared time basis. So the first sentence in the corrective action in the revised training memo, a combination of those two half sentences. It does refer to shared time basis right out of 125A.18.
So there isn't any language referencing a non-public school in 125A.03 paragraph A, correct?
It does not refer to non-public schools, but it says all children, and there's no, and right there, and this court in Independent School District 281 cited 125A.03A as requiring, reading the two statutes together, that all children with disabilities in the district are entitled to special instruction and services. So
has
we are following
court or the Minnesota Supreme Court ever held that a child who attends a non-public school full-time is entitled to services In other words, not a shared time student, someone who's exclusively at a non-public school?
I'm not aware of that, and that wouldn't be MDE's decision. This decision states that this, and the school district agrees the student is a shared time pupil. And correct. So the first sentence is referring to a shared time basis that the it is not for all students, but it read the two sentences, the two statutory language together, which is what this court did in the 2008 decision. And that
would that you agree it could together. Be more precise? It seems to me it's a little ambiguous the way it's drafted.
There's always times and ways to have things more specific. I think here the MDE was following this court's precedent in its earlier decision that says every district must provide special instruction to all children with a disability. And 125.18 states that includes non-public school students. Could there be improvements? There can always be improvements. But this, that first sentence in the training memo is a quotation directly from those two statutes consistent with case law.
All right, any further questions? All right, well, Mr. Walzberger, we will give you significantly longer than 5 minutes if need be. Thank you both, and thank you for bearing with us. But you know, this is obviously a significant case. All right.
Well, thank you.
Go ahead.
I'll try to tick through some things pretty quickly. First of all, on the concerns with the corrective action training memo, the court knows from looking at the addendum that the district raised the very same concerns with the MDE on multiple occasions, and the MDE refused to consider or address those concerns on its own. Stated it wouldn't collaborate, it wouldn't negotiate with the district, even though we had used direct quotations from the statute. So we do appreciate the court's assistance in that area. Additionally, I want to mention just quickly on reimbursement. It's been briefed. The one thing I would draw to your attention additionally, though, is that the record shows on three separate occasions, the district asked the MDE if there could be reimbursement. The MDE refused to respond to that question. The record shows that. They never responded to it, despite three specific requests from the district. I find it interesting now that the MDE just, for the first time in its responses, says, and it's brief, yep, there could be reimbursement, when that's certainly less than clear under the statute. I'd like to just briefly address, Your Honors, you looked at the decision on page 25 of the MDE's complaint decision. And the question was asked whether about the violation of regulations cited in paragraph one, and counsel immediately took you to the notice issues in paragraph two, the procedural issues, the prior written notice. But that statement in paragraph one is utterly false, that the district violated those regulations when it failed to include the student's use of the FM system at the student's private school. As is abundantly clear, federal law, including the federal regulations, does not require assistive technology or any other type of special education on site at the non-public school. The question turns solely on the interpretation of Minnesota law, and specifically the shared time statute. There's been questions about the intent of the legislature. First of all, nowhere has the Minnesota legislature ever said provide services or assistive technology on site at a non-public school. And there's no difference, by the way, in the standard between assistive technology and services when it comes to whether they're going to be provided in one location or another. It's part of special education. Is it okay if I continue, Your Honor?
Yes, please.
Okay. So there's nothing from the legislature stating that at all. And the legislature does say, though, again, case-by-case basis, we're supposed to make that determination. And the MDE does seek to completely eviscerate that. And this is abundantly clear looking at pages 19 and 20 of the MDE's brief. It says, quote, if due to the nature of the disability and service, the only way to provide it is physically on site, the district must provide it on site. In other words, when kids have these significant severe disabilities.
Wait, can I interrupt you just for one minute? Suzanne, I heard that the recording was stopped. So for purposes of our audio recording, do we need that to be on, or are we okay to proceed? Sorry, this is a technical. In the interest of time, let's just assume we're okay. Go ahead. And then can you repeat the last point you made?
Yes. So I was referring to pages 19 and 20 of the MDE's brief, and essentially their statement that if the nature of the disability and service is such that it can only be provided on site, then it has to be provided on site. And that encompasses a huge group of kiddos. Anybody who has one-to-one nursing needs, one-to-one paraprofessional needs, one-to-one teaching needs, toileting needs, et cetera, throughout their day. It's not just assistive technology or communication. This is a huge subsection of special education. Now, all those kids, based on the MDE, there's no discretion for the school district to decide location of services. All those kids automatically get it at the public school. And you just cannot square that with the legislature's clear direction that school districts have the right to determine the location of services. And it has to be that way from a resources standpoint. How could any school district from a public resources standpoint do that? Just send the staff out? And how do we even require the non-public school to allow us to do what we need to do?
Going back to the decision in this case, and this ties into what you were just talking about, one of the CFR rules that was referenced is 300.105, which relates specifically to assistive technology. And that says that paragraph B says, on a case-by-case basis, the use of school-purchased assistive technology devices in a child's home or other setting is required if the IEP team determines that the child needs to access those devices, that the child needs to access those devices in order to receive FAPE. Here, it seems the record reflects that the child does need to access those devices to receive FAPE. And maybe you disagree with that, but let's just assume that. Does this rule support the district's decision to require the device for this particular child? Assuming the record reflects that there was a determination that he needs the device?
It talks about in the home and other settings. And what that provision relates to, and I'm going off my memory, but my recollection is it refers to the home and other settings. And that's situations like, for example, when a child has a laptop at school and needs that then to take home in order to finish homework or to work on the goals and objectives in that other setting, that would be necessary. There's nothing that relates to that, to the provision of assistive technology, and then taking it into a non-public school to work on things that the public school district's not working on. That's a wholly separate piece.
Isn't it just being used to understand communication? It's not working on things that the public school is not working on. It's just to be able to communicate in this case.
Whether it's
at home, I mean, whether it's doing homework at home or listening to instruction during the day.
Yeah, to increase access, I think the student's understanding. I think that that's a fair statement. But again, I don't think that provision requires that. I'm not aware of a single court case out there that says that provision would require a school district to provide assistive technology in a non-public school setting. And we know it's not that way, because we know every federal court that's looked at the federal law, not Minnesota law, but the federal law says no individual right to receive some or all the special education services you would otherwise have a right to receive in the public school setting. So to try to bootstrap that and say now that changes all of that whole jurisprudence of federal law saying there's no individual right to services, you'd be turning on its head if you interpreted that regulation in that manner.
We have 125C.19 that talks about determining the location at which to provide services on a student by student basis consistent with federal law. And consistent with federal law has to mean something, knowing that typically under federal law, there isn't a requirement to provide special ed in a non-public school. And so the Minnesota law supplements that, and that consistent with federal law in that context must mean something other than nothing.
Well, I think consistent with federal law means that the district has discretion. That's what federal law gives school districts, is very, very, very broad discretion. No individual right to receive some or all the special education and related services you would otherwise receive in the public school setting must mean something. It must mean you don't have that right. And if you don't have that right, you can't turn around and say, well, now you do have a right to assistive technology. We're going to carve that out, because that's not, there's no way you can square those interpretations together, in my opinion. And I just want to take us back a little bit to RRM then too, or RMM, excuse me, which where the court talked about managing things. And counsel is right. The school district raised this concern about, well, how can we manage during the school day and monitor the education of students during the school day when they're at the non-public school setting? And the court said, you don't need to worry about that. And you don't need to worry about it because the shared time statute already addresses that by parsing the two out. Over here, you've got during your school day, when you're providing services, yep, you got to monitor. Over here, when they're during at the rest of the time, that's what that sentence relates to. Instead, when they're at the non-public school, you don't have to monitor. That has to mean something again, too. The court's saying that's the difference. And that's how the court interpreted it. And I don't know how else you can interpret it without us going having to go out there and provide services. Because when we think about
But you're not monitoring with an assistive device. You're not monitoring anything. I mean, they do break down. It may need to be repaired, but it doesn't require active efforts by the school district, right?
A couple of points. One, first of all, again, the standard, as counsel has said, is not different for that device than it is for services. It's part of the special education services. Two, when it breaks down, who has to repair it? Three, when the staff don't know how to use it, who goes in and has to use it for the district? Four, if the staff at the private school refuse to use it, aren't we in violation then if we say, here's this device that the student needs and the student's not using it? I struggle to see how we're not doing that, not monitoring what's happening with that particular device. And again, it seems like we could make it all nice and neat by just carving out this one little thing, because I get it, this kiddo would really benefit from the FM system. And it's a huge cost, but this kiddo would benefit from it, right? But how do we carve this out when we know the law addresses all services? And when we do this, we're gonna blow the whole thing up for all non-public school students who have significant needs to get the whole range of services without the funding for it. So I think that is a very legitimate concern for this district and for all districts, and why it makes this case so significant in my mind. And with that, I have nothing further, but I'm happy to respond to questions.
Are there any other questions from the panel? No, or Judge Klaphockey? No, okay, great, all right. Well, thank you both very much. And the great briefing and great arguments, and the case is now submitted, and we will issue our opinion within the statutory time period. So thank you both.
Thank you.